when Toranaga-sama goes to Osaka, everything is finished for him. And for you. Blackthorn felt ice in his marrow.
Why me?
You can't escape your fate, pilot. You helped Toranaga against Ishido. Have you forgotten? You put your hands violently on Ishido. You led the dash out of Osaka Harbor. I'm sorry, but being able to speak Japanese, or your swords and samurai status, won't help you at all. Perhaps it's worse now that you're samurai. Now you'll be ordered to commit seppuku, and if you refuse...
Alvito had added in the same gentle voice,
I told you before, they are a simple people.
We English are simple people too, he said, with no little bravado. When we're dead, we're dead. But before that, we put our trust in God and keep our powder dry. I've a few tricks left. Never fear.
Oh, I don't fear, pilot. I fear nothing. Not you, nor your heresy, nor your guns. They're all spiked. As you're spiked.
That's karma. In the hands of God. Call it what you will.
Blackthorn told him, rattled.
But by the Lord God, I'll get my ship back. And then, in a couple of years, I'll lead a squadron of English ships out here and blow you all to hell out of Asia.
Alvito spoke again with his vast, unnerving calm. That's in the hands of God, pilot. But here the die is cast, and nothing of what you say will happen. Nothing.
Alvito had looked at him as though he were already dead.
May God have mercy on you, for as God is my judge, pilot, I believe you'll never leave these islands.
Blackthorn shivered, remembering the total conviction with which Alvito had said that.
You're cold, Anjin-san?
Mariko was standing beside him on the veranda now, shaking out her umbrella in the dusk.
Oh, sorry, no, I'm not cold. I was just wondering.
He glanced up at the pass. The whole column had vanished into the cloud bank. The rain had abated a little and had become mild and soft. Some villagers and servants splashed through the puddles, homeward bound. The forecourt was empty, the garden waterlogged. Oil lanterns were coming on throughout the village. No longer were there sentries on the gateway or at both sides of the bridge. A great emptiness seemed to dominate the twilight.
It's much prettier at night, isn't it?
She said.
Yes, he replied,
totally aware that they were alone together, and safe, if they were careful, and if she wanted, as he wanted. A maid came and took her umbrella, bringing dry tabi socks. She knelt and began to towel Mariko's feet dry.
Tomorrow at dawn, we'll begin our journey, Anjin-san.
How long will it take us?
A number of days, Anjin-san. Lord Toranaga said...
Mariko glanced off as Gyoko padded obsequiously from inside the inn.
Lord Toranaga told me there was plenty of time.
Gyoko bowed low.
Good evening, Lady Toda. Please excuse me for interrupting you.
How are you, Gyoko-san?
Fine, thank you, though I wish this rain would stop. I don't like this mugginess. But then, when the rain stop, we have the heat, and that's so much worse, ne? But the autumn's not far away. Ah, we're so lucky to have autumn to look forward to, and heavenly spring, ne?
Mariko did not answer. The maid fastened the tabi for her and got up.
Thank you,
Mariko said, dismissing her.
So, Gyoko-san, there's something I can do for you?
Kiku-san asked if you would like her to serve you at dinner, or to dance or sing for you tonight. Lord Toranaga left instructions for her to entertain you, if you wished.
Yes, he told me, Gyoko-san. That would be very nice, but perhaps not tonight. We have to leave at dawn, and I'm very tired. There'll be other nights, nay? Please give her my apologies and... Oh, yes, please tell her I'm delighted to have the company of you both on the road.
Toranaga had ordered Mariko to take the two women with her, and she had thanked him, pleased to have them as a formal chaperone.
"You're too kind," Kyoko said, with honey on her tongue. "But it's our honor. We're still to go to Edo?"
"Yes, of course. Why?"
"Nothing, Lady Toda. But in that case, perhaps we could stop in Mishima for a day or two. Kiku-san would like to gather up some clothes. She doesn't feel adequately gowned for Lord Toranaga, and I hear the Edo summer's very sultry and mosquitoed. We should collect her wardrobe, bad as it is."
"Yes, of course. You'll both have more than enough time."
Kyoko did not look at Blackthorn, though both were very conscious of him.
It's tragic about our master, ne?"
"Karma," Mariko replied evenly. Then she added with a woman's sweet viciousness, "But nothing's changed, Kyoko-san. You'll be paid the day you arrive, in silver, as the contract says."
"Oh, so sorry,"
the older woman told her, pretending to be shocked.
"So sorry, Lady Toda, but money? That was the farthest from my mind. Never. I was only concerned with our master's future."
"He's master of his own future," Mariko said easily, believing it no more. "But your future's good, isn't it? Whatever happens. You're rich now. All your worldly troubles are over. Soon you'll be a power in Edo with your new guild of courtesans, whoever rules the Kanto. Soon you'll be the greatest of all Mama-sans, and whatever happens, well, Kiku-san's still your protege, and her youth's not touched. Neither is her karma. Ne?"
"My only concern is for Lord Toranaga,"
Kyoko answered with practiced gravity, her anus twitching at the thought of 2,500 koku so nearly in her strong room.
"If there is any way I could help him, I would."
"How generous of you, Kyoko-san. I'll tell him of your offer. Yes, 1,000 koku off the price would help very much. I accept on his behalf."
Kyoko fluttered her fan, put a gracious smile on her face, and just managed not to wail aloud at her imbecility for jumping into a trap like a sake-besotted novice.
"Oh no, Lady Toda. How could money help so generous a patron? No, clearly money's no help to him,"
she babbled, trying to recover.
"No, money's no help. Better information, or a service, or..."
"Please excuse me. What information?"
"None. None at the moment. I was just using that as a figure of speech, so sorry. But money..."
"Ah, so sorry, yes. Well, I'll tell him of your offer, and of your generosity. On his behalf, thank you."
Kyoko bowed at the dismissal and scuttled back into the inn. Mariko's little laugh trickled out.
"What are you laughing at, Mariko-san?"
She told him what had been said.
"Mama-san's must be the same the world over. She's just worried about her money."
"Will Lord Toranaga pay, even though..."
Blackthorn stopped. Mariko waited guilelessly. Then, under her gaze, he continued.
"Father Alvito said when Lord Toranaga goes to Osaka, he's finished."
"Oh, yes. Yes, Anjin-san. That's most very true,"
Mariko said with a brightness she did not feel. Then she put Toranaga and Osaka into their compartments and was tranquil again.
"But Osaka's many leagues away and countless sticks of time in the future. And until that time, when what is to be is, Ishido doesn't know. The good father doesn't truly know. We don't know. No one knows what will truly happen, eh? Except the Lord God.
But he won't tell us, will he? Until perhaps it has already come to pass. Ne?"
"Hi!" he laughed with her. "Ah, you're so wise."
"Thank you. I have a suggestion, Anjin-san. During the journey time, let us forget all outside problems. All of them."
"Thou," he said in Latin, "it is good to see thee."
and thee. Extraordinary care in front of both women during our journey is very necessary, nay?
Depend on it, lady.
I do. In truth, I do very much.
Now we are almost alone, nay? Thou and I.
Yes. But what was is not, and never happened.
True. Yes. Thou art correct again. And beautiful.
A samurai strode through the gateway and saluted her. He was middle-aged with graying hair, his face pitted, and he walked with a slight limp.
Please excuse me, Lady Toda, but we'll leave at dawn, eh?
Yes, Yoshinaka-san. But it doesn't matter if we're delayed till noon, if you wish. We've plenty of time.
Yes, as you prefer. Let us leave at noon. Good evening, Anjin-san. Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm Akira Yoshinaka, captain of your escort. Good evening, captain.
Yoshinaka turned back to Mariko.
I'm responsible for you and him, lady, so please tell him I've ordered two men to sleep in his room by night as his personal guards. Then there'll be 10 sentries on duty nightly. They'll be all around you. I've 100 men in all.
Very well, captain. But so sorry. It would be better not to station any men in the Anjin-san's room. It's a very serious custom of theirs to sleep alone, or alone with one lady. My maid will probably be with him, so he'll be protected. Please keep the guards around, but not too close. Then he won't be unsettled.
Yoshinaka scratched his head and frowned.
Very well, lady. Yes, I'll agree to that, though my way's more sensible. Then, so sorry. Then please ask him not to go on any of these night walks of his. Until we get to Edo, I'm responsible. And when I'm responsible for very important persons, I get very nervous.
He bowed stiffly and went away.
The captain asks you not to walk off by yourself during our journey. If you get up at night, always take a samurai with you, Anjin-san. He says this would help him.
All right. Yes, I'll do that.
Blackthorn was watching him leave.
What else did he say? I caught something about sleeping. I couldn't understand him very...
He stopped. Kiku came from within. She wore a bathrobe with a towel decorously swathed around her hair. Barefoot, she sauntered toward the hot spring bathhouse, half bowed to them, and waved gaily. They returned her salutation. Blackthorn took in her long legs and the sinuousness of her walk until she disappeared. He felt Mariko's eyes watching him closely and looked back at her.
No,
he said blandly and shook his head. She laughed.
I thought it might be difficult, might be uncomfortable for you, to have her just as a traveling companion after such a special pillowing.
Uncomfortable, no. On the contrary, very pleasant. I've very pleasant memories. I'm glad she belongs to Lord Toranaga now. That makes everything easy, for her and for him, and everyone.
He was going to add, everyone except Omi, but thought better of it.
After all, to me she was only a very special, glorious gift. Nothing more. Eh?
She was a gift, yes.
He wanted to touch Mariko, but he did not. Instead, he turned and stared up at the pass, not sure what he read behind her eyes. Night obscured the pass now, and the clouds. Water dripped nicely from the roof.
What else did the captain say?
Nothing of importance, Anjin-san.
Chapter 45. Their journey to Mishima took 9 days, and every night, for part of the night, they were together. Secretly. Unwittingly, Yoshinaka assisted them. At each inn, he would naturally choose adjacent rooms for all of them.
I hope you do not object, lady, but this will make security much easier, he would always say,
and Mariko would agree and take the center room, Kiku and Gyoko to one side, Blackthorn to the other. Then, in the dark of the night, she would leave her maid, Chimoko, and go to him. With adjoining rooms coupled with the usual chatter and night sounds and singing and carousing of other travellers, with their swarms of ever-present anxious-to-please maids, the alert outward guarding sentries were none the wiser. Only Chimoko was privy to the secret. Mariko was aware that eventually Gyoko, Kiku, and all the women in their party would know. But this did not worry her. She was samurai, and they were not. Her word would carry against theirs, unless she was caught blatantly, and no samurai, not even Yoshinaka, would normally dare to open her door by night, uninvited. As far as everyone was concerned, Blackthorn shared his bed with Chimoko, or one of the maids in the inn. It was no one's business but his. So only a woman could betray her, and if she was betrayed, her betrayer and all the women of the party would die an even more vulgar and more lingering death than hers, for so disgusting a betrayal. Then, too, if she wished, before they reached Mishima or Edo, all knew she could have them put to death at her whim for the slightest indiscretion, real or alleged. Mariko was sure Toranaga would not object to a killing. Certainly he would applaud Gyoko's, and in her private heart, Mariko was sure he would not object even to Kiku's. 2,500 koku could buy many a courtesan of the first rank. So she felt safe from the women, but not from Blackthorn, much as she loved him now. He was not Japanese. He had not been trained from birth to build the inner, impenetrable fences behind which to hide. His face, or manner, or pride would betray them. She was not afraid for herself, only for him.
"At long last, I know what love means," she murmured the first night.
And because she no longer fought against love's onslaught, but yielded to its irresistibility, her terror for his safety consumed her.
"I love thee, so I'm afraid for thee,"
she whispered, holding on to him, using Latin, the language of lovers. "I love thee. Oh, how I love thee."
"I've destroyed thee, my love, by beginning. We're doomed now. I've destroyed thee. That is the truth."
"No, Mariko. Somehow something will happen to make everything right."
"I should never have begun. The fault is mine."
"Do not worry, I beg thee. Karma is karma." At length she pretended to be persuaded and melted into his arms. But she was sure he would be his own nemesis. For herself, she was not afraid. The nights were joyous, tender, and each one better than before. The days were easy for her, difficult for him. He was constantly on guard, determined for her sake not to make a mistake.
"There will be no mistake,"
she said, while they were riding together, safely apart from the rest, now keeping up a pretense of absolute confidence after her lapse of the first night.
"Thou art strong, thou art samurai, and there will be no mistake."
"And when we get to Edo?"
"Let Edo take care of Edo. I love thee."
"Yes, I love thee too."
"Then why so sad?"
"Not sad, lady. Just that silence is painful. I wish to shout my love from the mountaintops." They delighted in their privacy and their certainty they were still safe from prying eyes.
"What will happen to them, Gyoko-san?"
Kiku asked softly in their palanquin, on the first day of the journey.
"Disaster, Kiku-san! There's no hope for their future. He hides it well, but she... her adoration shouts from her face. Look at her, like a young girl. Oh, how foolish she is! But oh, how beautiful, ne? How lucky to be so fulfilled, ne? Yes, but even so, I wouldn't wish their deaths on anyone." "What will Yoshinaka do when he discovers them?"
Kiku asked.
"Perhaps he won't. I pray he won't. Men are such fools and so stupid. They can't see the simplest things about women, thanks be to Buddha, bless his name. Let's pray they're not discovered until we've gone about our business in Edo. Let's pray we're not held responsible. Oh, very yes. And this afternoon, when we stop, let's find the nearest shrine, and I'll light 10 incense sticks as a god favor. By all gods, I'll even endow a temple to all gods with 3 koku yearly for 10 years, if we escape, and if I get my money." But they're so beautiful together, Nick. I've never seen a woman blossom so.
Yes, but she'll wither like a broken camellia when she's accused before Buntaro-san. Their karma is their karma, and there's nothing we can do about them. Or about Lord Toranaga. Or even Omi-san. Don't cry, child. Poor Omi-san.
Omi had overtaken them on the third day. He had stayed at their inn, and after the evening meal, he had spoken privately to Kiku, asking her formally to join him for all eternity.
Willingly, Omi-san, willingly,
she had answered at once, allowing herself to cry, for she liked him very much.
But my duty to Lord Toranaga, who favoured me, and to Gyoko-san, who formed me, forbids it.
But Lord Toranaga's forfeited his rights to you. He surrendered. He's finished.
But his contract isn't, Omi-san, much as I wish it. His contract's legal and binding. Please excuse me. I must refuse.
Don't answer now, Kiku-san. Think about it. Please, I beg you. Tomorrow give me your answer, he said, and left her. But her tearful answer had been the same.
I can't be so selfish, Omi-san. Please forgive me. My duty to Lord Toranaga and to Gyoko-san. I can't, much as I'd wish it. Please forgive me.
He had argued. More private tears flowed. They had sworn perpetual adoration, and then she'd sent him away with a promise.
If the contract's broken, or Lord Toranaga dies and I'm freed, then I'll do whatever you want. I'll obey whatever you order.
And so he had left the inn and rode on ahead to Mishima, filled with foreboding, and she had dried her tears and repaired her makeup. Gyoko complimented her.
You're so wise, child. Oh, how I wish the Lady Toda had half your wisdom.
Yoshinika led leisurely from inn to inn along the course of the River Kano, as it meandered northward to the sea, falling in with the delays that always seemed to happen, not caring about time. Toranaga had told him privately there was no need to hurry, providing he delivered his charges safely to Edo by the new moon.
I'd prefer them there later than sooner, Yoshinaka-san. You understand?
Yes, sire,
he had replied. Now he blessed his guarding Kami for giving him the respite. At Mishima with Lord Hiromatsu, or at Edo with Lord Toranaga, he would have to make his obligatory report, verbally and in writing. Then he would have to decide whether he should tell what he thought, not what he had been so careful not to see.
Eesh,
he told himself, appalled.
Surely I'm mistaken. The Lady Toda? Her and any man, let alone the barbarian.
Isn't it your duty to see? He asked himself.
To obtain proof? To catch them behind closed doors, bedded together? You'll be condemned yourself for collusion if you don't, ne? It'd be so easy, even though they're very careful. Yes, but only a fool would bring such tidings, he thought. Isn't it better to play the dullard and pray no one betrays them, and so betrays you? My life's ended. We're all doomed, so what does it matter? Turn your eyes away. Leave them to their karma. What does it matter?
With all his soul, the samurai knew it mattered very much.
Ah, good morning, Mariko-san. How beautiful the day is,
Father Alvito said, walking up to them. They were outside the inn, ready to start the day's journey. He made the sign of the cross over her.
May God bless you and keep you in his hands forever. Thank you, Father. Good morning, pilot. How are you today?
Good, thank you. And you?
Their party and the Jesuits had leapfrogged each other on the march. Sometimes they had stayed at the same inn. Sometimes they journeyed together.
Would you like me to ride with you this morning, pilot? I'd be happy to continue the Japanese lessons, if you've a mind.
Thank you. Yes, I'd like that.
On the first day, Alvito had offered to try to teach Blackthorn the language.
In return for what?
Blackthorn had asked warily.
Nothing. It would help me pass the time. And to tell you the truth, at the moment I'm saddened by life and feel old. Also perhaps to apologize for my harsh words.
I expect no apology from you. You've your way, I've mine. We can never meet.
Perhaps. But on our journey, we could share things, nay? We're travellers on the same road. I'd like to help you.
Why?
Knowledge belongs to God, not to man. I'd like to help you as a gift. Nothing in return.
Thanks. But I don't trust you.
Then, if you insist, in return, tell me about your world. What you've seen and where you've been. Anything you like, but only what you like. The real truth. Truly, it would fascinate me, and it would be a fair exchange. I came to Japan when I was 13 or 14, and I've seen nothing of the world. We could even agree to a truce for the journey, if you wish.
But no religion or politics, and no papist doctrines.
I am what I am, Pilot. But I will try.
So they began to exchange knowledge cautiously. For Blackthorn it seemed an unfair trade. Alvito's erudition was enormous. He was a masterly teacher, whereas Blackthorn thought he related only things that any pilot would know.
But that's not true, Alvito had said. You're a unique pilot. You've done incredible things. One of half a dozen on Earth, ne?
Gradually, a truce did happen between them, and this pleased Mariko.
This is friendship, Anjin-san, or the beginning of it,
Mariko said.
No, not friendship. I distrust him as much as ever, as he does me. We're perpetual enemies. I've forgotten nothing, nor has he. This is a respite, temporary, probably for a special purpose. He'd never tell me if I were to ask. I understand him. And there's no harm, so long as I don't drop my guard.
While he spent time with Alvito, she would ride lazily with Kiku and Gyoko, and talk about pillowing, and about ways to please men, and about the willow world. In return, she told them about her world, sharing what she had witnessed or been part of or learned, about the dictator Goroda, the Taiko, and even Lord Torunaga. Judicious stories about the majestic ones, that no commoner would ever know. A few leagues south of Mishima, the river curled away to the west, to fall placidly to the coast and the large port of Numazu, and they left the ravine-like country and pushed across the flat rice paddy plains along the wide busy road that headed northward. There were many streams and tributaries to ford. Some were shallow, some were deep and very wide, and they had to be poled across in flat barges. Very few were spanned. Usually they were all carried across on the shoulders of porters from the plenty that were always stationed nearby for this special purpose, chattering and bidding for that privilege. This was the seventh day from Nyokose. The road forked, and here Father Alvito said he had to leave them. He would take the west path to return to his ship for a day or so, but he would catch them up and join them again on the road from Mishima to Edo, if that was permitted.
Of course, you're both welcome to come with me, if you wish. Thank you, but so sorry. There are things I must do in Mishima,
Mariko said.
Anjin-san? If Lady Mariko's going to be busy, you'd be welcome by yourself. Our cook's very good. The wine's fair. As God is my judge, you'd be safe and free to come and go as you wish. Rodriguez is aboard.
Mariko saw that Blackthorn wanted to leave her.
How can he? She asked herself with a great sadness. How can he want to leave me when time is so short? Please go, Anjin-san, she said. It would be nice for you. And good to see the Rodriguez, ne?
But Blackthorn did not go, much as he wanted to. He didn't trust the priest. Not even for Rodriguez would he put his head in that trap. He thanked Alvito, and they watched him ride away.
Let's stop now, Anjin-san,
Mariko said, even though it was barely noon.
There's no hurry, eh?
Excellent. Yes, I'd like that.
The father's a good man, but I'm glad he's gone.
So am I. But he's not a good man. He's a priest.
She was taken aback by his vehemence.
Oh, so sorry, Anjin-san. Please excuse me for say...
It's not important, Mariko-chan. I told you, nothing's forgotten. He'll always be after my hide.
Blackthorn went to find Captain Yoshinoko. Troubled, she looked down the western fork. The horses of Father Alvito's party moved through the other travellers unhurriedly. Some passerby bowed to the small cortege, some knelt in humility. Many were curious, many hard-faced. But all moved politely out of the way. Except even the lowest samurai. When Father Alvito met a samurai, he moved to the left or to the right, and his acolytes followed him. He was glad to be leaving Mariko and Blackthorn, glad of the break. He had urgent dispatches to send to the Father Visitor that he had been unable to send because his carrier pigeons had been destroyed in Yokose. There were so many problems to solve. Torunaga, Uo the fisherman, Mariko, and the pirate. And Joseph, who continued to dog his footsteps.
What's he doing there, Captain Yoshinoka?
He had blurted out the first day, when he noticed Joseph among the guards, wearing a military kimono, and, awkwardly, swords.
Lord Torunaga ordered me to take him to Mishima, Tsuku-san. There I'm to turn him over to Lord Hiromatsu. Oh, so sorry. Does the sight of him offend you?
No. No,
he had said unconvincingly.
Ah, you're looking at his swords. There's no need to worry. They're only hilts. They've no blades. It's Lord Torunaga's orders. Seems as the man was ordered into your order so young. It's not clear if he should have real swords or not. Much as he's entitled to wear them, much as he wants them. Seems he joined your order as a child, Tsuku-san. Even so, of course we can't have a samurai without swords, ne? Uraga no Torashima is certainly samurai, though he's been a barbarian priest for 20 years. Our master's widely made this compromise.
What's going to happen to him?
I'm to hand him over to Lord Hiromatsu. Maybe he'll be sent back to his uncle for judgment. Maybe he'll stay with us. I only obey orders, Tsuku-san.
Father Alvito went to speak with Joseph, but Yoshinaka had stopped him politely.
So sorry, but my master also ordered him kept to himself, away from everyone, particularly Christians. Until Lord Harima gives a judgment, my master said. Uraga-san's Lord Harima's vassal, eh? Lord Harima's Christian, too. Eh? Lord Torunaga says a Christian daimyo should deal with the Christian renegade. After all, Lord Harima's his uncle and leader of the house, and it was he who ordered him into your keeping in the first place.
Though it was forbidden, Alvito had tried again that night to talk to Joseph privately, to beg him to withdraw his sacrilege and kneel in penance to the Father Visitor. But the youth had coldly walked away without listening, and after that, Joseph was always sent far ahead.
Somehow, Holy Madonna, we've got to bring him back to the mercy of God,
Alvito thought in anguish.
What can I do? Perhaps the Father Visitor will know how to handle Joseph. Yes, and you'll know what to do about Torunaga's incredible decision to submit.
Which, in their secret conferences, they discarded as an impossibility.
No, that's totally against Torunaga's character,
Delacroix had said.
He'll go to war. When the rains cease, perhaps before, if he can get Sateki to recant and betray Ishido. My forecast is he'll wait as long as he can and try to force Ishido to make the first move. His usual waiting game. Whatever happens, so long as Kiyama and Onoshi support Ishido and Asaka, the Kanto will be overrun and Torunaga destroyed.
And Kiyama and Onoshi? They'll keep their enmity buried for the common good?
Yes, they're totally convinced a Torunaga victory would be the Holy Church's death knell. Now that Harima will side with Ishido, I'm afraid Toranaga's a broken dream.
Civil war again, Alvito thought. Brother against brother, father against son, village against village. Anjiro ready to revolt, armed with stolen muskets, so Yuo the fisherman had whispered. And the other frightening news. A secret musket regiment almost ready. A modern European-style cavalry unit of more than 2,000 muskets adapted to Japanese warfare. Oh, Madonna, protect the faithful and curse that heretic. Such a pity Blackthorn is twisted and mind deformed. He could be such a valuable ally. I never would have thought that, but it's true. He's incredibly wise in the ways of the sea and the world. Brave and cunning, honest within his heresy, straight and guileless. Never needs to be told something twice, his memory astonishing. He's taught me so much about the world, and about himself. Is that wrong? Alvito wondered sadly, as he turned to wave at Mariko a last time. Is it wrong to learn about your enemy, and in return, to teach? No. Is it wrong to turn a blind eye to mortal sin? 3 days out from Yokose, Brother Michael's observation had shattered him. You believe they're lovers?
What is God but love? Isn't that the Lord Jesus' word?
Michael had replied.
I only mentioned I saw their eyes touching each other, and that it was so beautiful to see. About their bodies I don't know, Father, and in truth I don't care. Their souls touch, and I seem to be more aware of God because of it.
You must be mistaken about them. She'd never do that. It's against her whole heritage, against her law and the law of God. She's a devout Christian. She knows adultery's a hideous sin.
Yes, that is what we teach, but her marriage was Shinto, not consecrated before the Lord our God. So is it adultery?
Do you also question the word? Are you infected by Joseph's heresy?
No, Father, please excuse me. Never the word, only what man has made of it.
From then on, he had watched more closely. Clearly the man and woman liked each other greatly. Why shouldn't they? Nothing wrong in that. Constantly thrown together, each learning from the other, the woman ordered to put away her religion, the man having none, or only a patterner of the Lutheran heresy, as Delacroix had said was true of all Englishmen. Both strong, vital people, however ill-matched. At confession, she said nothing. He did not press her. Her eyes told him nothing and everything. But never was there anything real to judge. He could hear himself explaining to Delacroix. Michael must have been mistaken, Eminence.
But did she commit adultery? Was there any proof?
Thankfully, no proof. Alvito reined in and turned back momentarily. He saw her standing on the slight rise, the pilot talking to Yashinika, the old madam and her painted whore lying in their palanquin. He was tormented by the fanatic zeal welling up inside him. For the first time, he dared to ask, Have you whored with the pilot, Mariko-san? Has the heretic damned your soul for all eternity? You, who were chosen in life to be a nun, and probably our first native abbess? Are you living in foul sin, unconfessed, desecrated, hiding your sacrilege from your confessor? And thus are you too befouled before God? He saw her wave. This time he did not acknowledge it, but turned his back, jabbed his spurs into his horse's flanks, and hurried away. That night their sleep was disturbed.
What is it, my love?
Nothing, Mariko-chan. Go back to sleep.
But she did not. Nor did he. Long before she had to, she slipped back into her own room, and he got up and sat in the courtyard, studying the dictionary under candlelight until dawn.
When the sun came and the day warmed, their night cares vanished, and they continued their journey peacefully. Soon they reached the great trunk road, the Tokaido, just east of Mishima, and travellers became more numerous. The vast majority were, as always, on foot, their belongings on their backs. There were a few pack horses on the road, and no carriages at all.
Oh, carriage. That's something with wheels, ne? They're of no use in Japan, Anjin-san. Our roads are too steep and always crisscrossed with rivers and streams. Wheels would also ruin the surface of the roads, so they are forbidden to everyone except the emperor, and he travels a few ceremonial li in Kyoto on a special road. We don't need wheels. How can you carry vehicles over a river or stream? And there are too many, far too many to bridge. There are perhaps 60 streams to cross between here and Edo, Anjin-san. How many have we already had to cross? Dozens, ne? No, we all walk or ride horseback. Of course, horses and palanquins particularly are allowed only for important persons, daimyos and samurai, and not even all samurai.
What? Even if you can afford one, you can't hire one?
Not unless you've the correct rank, Anjin-san. That's very wise, don't you think? Doctors and the very old can travel by horse or palanquin, or the very sick, if they get permission in writing from their liege lord. Palanquins or horses wouldn't be right for peasants and commoners, Anjin-san. That could teach them lazy habits, ne? It's much more healthy for them to walk.
Also, it keeps them in their place, ne?
Oh, yes. But that all makes for peace and orderliness and war. Only merchants have money to waste. And what are they but parasites who create nothing, grow nothing, make nothing but feed off another's labor? Definitely, they should all walk, ne? In this, we are very wise.
I've never seen so many people on the move, Blackthorn said.
Oh, this is nothing. Wait till we get nearer Edo. We adore to travel, Anjin-san, but rarely alone. We like to travel in groups.
But the crowds did not inhibit their progress. The Toranaga cipher that their standards carried, Toda Mariko's personal rank, and the brusque efficiency of Akira Yoshinaka and the runners he sent ahead to proclaim who followed, ensured the best private rooms every night at the best inn, and an uninterrupted passage. All other travellers and samurai quickly stood aside and bowed very low, waiting until they had passed.
Do they all have to stop and kneel like that to everyone?
Oh no, Anjin-san. Only to daimyos and important persons. And to most samurai. Yes, that would be a very wise practice for any commoner. It's polite to do so, Anjin-san. And necessary, ne? Unless the common people respect the samurai and themselves, how can the law be upheld and the realm be governed? Then, too, it's the same for everyone. We stopped and bowed and allowed the imperial messenger to pass, didn't we? Everyone must be polite, ne? Lesser daimyos have to dismount and bow to more important ones. Ritual governs our lives, but the realm is obedient.
Say two daimyos are equal, and they meet.
Then both would dismount and bow equally, and go their separate ways.
Say Lord Toranaga and General Ishido met.
Mariko turned smoothly to Latin.
Who are they, Anjin-san? Those names I know not, not today, not between thee and me.
Thou art correct. Please excuse me.
Listen, my love. Let us make a promise that if the Madonna smiles on us and we escape from Mishima, only at Edo, at First Bridge, only when it is completely forced upon us, let us leave our private world. Please?
What special dangers in Mishima?
There our captain must submit a report to the Lord Hiromatsu. There I must see him also. He is a wise man, very vigilant. It would be easy for us to be betrayed.
We have been cautious. Let us petition God that thy fears are without merit.
For myself, I am not concerned, only for thee.
And I for thee.
Then do we promise, one to another,
to stay within our private world?
Yes. Let us pretend it is the real world. Our only world.
There's Mishima, Anjin-san.
Maniko pointed across the last stream. The sprawling castle city, which housed nearly 60,000 people, was mostly obscured by morning's low-lying mist. Only a few housetops and the stone castle were discernible. Beyond were mountains that ran down to the western sea. Far to the northwest was the glory of Mount Fuji. North and east, the mountain range encroached on the sky.
What now?
Now Yoshinoka's been asked to find the liveliest inn within 10 li. We'll stay there 2 days. It will take me at least that to complete my business. Gyoko and Kiku-san will be leaving us for that time.
Then?
Then we go on. What does your weather sense tell you about Mishima?
That it's friendly and safe, he replied. After Mishima, what then?
She pointed northeast, unconvinced.
Then we'll go that way. There's a pass that curls up through the mountains toward Hakone. It's the most grueling part of the whole Tokaido Road. After that, the road falls away to the city of Odawara, which is much bigger than Mishima, Anjin-san. It's on the coast. From there to Edo is only a matter of time.
How much time?
Not enough.
You're wrong, my love. So sorry, he said. There's all the time in the world.
Chapter 46. General Toda Hiramatsu accepted the private dispatch that Mariko offered. He broke Torunaga's seals. The scroll told briefly what had happened at Yokose, confirmed Torunaga's decision to submit, ordered Hiramatsu to hold the frontier and the passes to the Kanto against any intruder until he arrived, but to expedite any messenger from Ishido or from the east, and gave instructions about the renegade Christian and about the Anjin-san. Wearily, the old soldier read the message a second time.
Now tell me everything you saw at Yokose, or heard, affecting Lord Torunaga.
Mariko obeyed.
Now tell me what you think happened.
Again she obeyed.
What occurred at the Chano-yu between you and my son?
She told him everything, exactly as it happened.
My son said our master would lose? Before the second meeting with Lord Zatagi?
Yes, sire.
You're sure?
Oh, yes, sire.
There was a long silence in the room high up in the castle donjon that dominated the city. Hiramatsu got to his feet and went to the arrow embrasure in the thick stone wall, his back and joints aching, his sword loose in his hands.
I don't understand.
Sire?
Neither my son nor our master. We can smash through any armies Ishido puts into the field. And as to the decision to submit...
She toyed with her fan, watching the evening sky, star-filled and pleasing. Hiramatsu studied her.
You're looking very well, Mariko-san. Younger than ever. What's your secret?
I haven't one, sire, she replied, her throat suddenly dry.
She waited for her world to shatter, but the moment passed, and the old man turned his shrewd eyes back to the city below.
Now tell me what happened since you left Osaka. Everything you saw or heard or were part of, he said.
It was far into the night by the time she had finished. She related everything clearly, except the extent of her intimacy with the Anjin-san. Even here she was careful not to hide her liking for him, her respect for his intelligence and bravery, or Torunaga's admiration for his value. For a while, Hiramatsu continued to wander up and down, the movement easing his pain. Everything dovetailed with Yoshinoka's report and Omi's report, and even Zataki's tirade before that daimyo had stormed off to Shinano. Now he understood many things that had been unclear, and had enough information to make a calculated decision. Some of what she related disgusted him. Some made him hate his son even more. He could understand his son's motives, but that made no difference. The rest of what she said forced him to resent the barbarian, and sometimes to admire him.
You saw him pull our lord to safety?
Yes. Lord Torunaga would be dead now, sire, but for him. I'm quite certain. 3 times he has saved our master. Escaping from Osaka Castle, aboard the galley in Osaka Harbour, and absolutely at the earthquake. I saw the swords Omi-san had dug up. They were twisted like noodle dough, and just as useless.
You think the Anshin-san really meant to commit seppuku?
Yes. By the Lord God of the Christians, I believe he made that commitment. Only Omi-san prevented it. And, sire, I believe totally he's worthy to be samurai, worthy to be Hatamoto.
I didn't ask for that opinion.
Please excuse me, sire. Truly you didn't. But that question was still in the front of your mind.
You've become a thought reader, as well as barbarian trainer?
Oh, no. Please excuse me, sire. Of course not, she said in her nicest voice. I merely answer the leader of my clan to the best of my very poor ability. Our master's interests are first in my mind. Your interests are second only to his.
Are they?
Please excuse me, but that shouldn't be necessary to ask. Command me, sire. I'll do your bidding.
Why so proud, Mariko-san? He asked testily. And so right, eh?
Please excuse me, sire. I was rude. I don't deserve such...
I know. No woman does.
Hiramatsu laughed.
But even so, there are times when we need a woman's cold, cruel, vicious, cunning, practical wisdom. They're so much cleverer than we are, eh?
Oh, no, sire, she said, wondering what was really in his mind.
It's just as well we're alone. If that was repeated in public, they'd say old Iron Fist's overripe. But it's time for him to put down his sword, shave his head, and begin to say prayers to Buddha for the souls of the men he sent into the void. And they'd be right.
No, sire. It's as the Lord your son said. Until our master's fate is set, you may not retreat. Neither you, nor the Lord my husband, nor I.
Yes. Even so, I'd be very pleased to lay down my sword and seek the place of Buddha for myself and those I have killed.
He stared at the knight for a time, feeling his age, then looked at her. She was pleasing to see, more than any woman he had ever known.
Sire?
Nothing, Mariko-san. I was remembering the first time I saw you.
That was when Hiramatsu had secretly mortgaged his soul to Gorodo to obtain this slip of a girl for his own son. The same son who had slaughtered his own mother, the one woman Hiramatsu had ever really adored.
Why did I get Mariko for him? Because I wanted to spite the Taiko, who desired her also. To spite a rival. Nothing more. Was my consort truly unfaithful?
The old man asked himself, reopening the perpetual sore.
Oh, gods! When I look you in the face, I'll demand an answer to that question. I want a yes or no. I demand the truth. I think it's a lie, but Buntaro said she was alone with that man in the room, disheveled, her kimono loose, and it was months before I returned. It could be a lie, ne? Or the truth, ne? It must be the truth. Surely no son would behead his own mother without being sure.
Mariko was observing the lines of Hiromatsu's face, his skin stretched and scaled with age, and the ancient muscular strength of his arms and shoulders.
What are you thinking? She wondered, liking him. Have you seen through me yet? Do you know about me and the Anjin-san now? Do you know I quiver with love for him? That when I have to choose between him and thee and Toranaga, I will choose him?
Hiramatsu stood near the embrasure, looking down at the city below, his fingers kneading the scabbard and the haft of his sword, oblivious of her. He was brooding about Toranaga and what Sataki had said a few days ago in bitter disgust. Disgust that he had shared.
Yes, of course I want to conquer the Kanto and plant my standard on the walls of Edo Castle now and make it my own. I never did before, but now I do,
Sataki had told him.
But this way, there's no honor in it. No honor for my brother or you. Or me, or anyone, except Ishido, and that peasant doesn't know any better. Then support Lord Torinaga. With your help, for what? So my brother can become shogun and stamp out the heir? He said 100 times he supports the heir. I believe he does. And we'd have a Minowara to lead us, not an upstart peasant and the Hellcat Ochiban, eh? Those incompetents will have 8 years of rule before Yeamon's of age if Lord Torinaga dies. Why not give Lord Torinaga the 8 years? He's Minowara. He said 1,000 times he'll hand over power to Yeamon. Is your brain in your arse? Torinaga's not Yeamon's enemy, or yours. No Minowara would kneel to that peasant. He's pissed on his honour, and all of ours. Yours and mine.
They had argued and cursed each other, and in privacy had almost come to blows.
Go on, he had taunted Zataki. Draw your sword, traitor. You're traitor to your brother who's head of your clan. I'm head of my own clan. We share the same mother, but not father. Torinaga's father sent me away in disgrace. I'll not help Torinaga, but if he abdicates and slits his belly, I'll support Sudara. There's no need to do that,
Hiromatsu told the knight, still enraged.
There's no need to do that while I'm alive, or meekly to submit. I'm general-in-chief. It's my duty to protect my master's honor and house, even from himself. So now I decide. Listen, sire, please excuse me, but this time I disobey. With pride. This time I betray you. Now I'm going to co-opt your son and heir, the Lord Sudara and his wife, the Lady Genjiko. And together we'll order Crimson Sky when the rains cease, and then war begins. And until the last man in the Kanto dies, facing the enemy, I'll hold you safe in Edo Castle, whatever you say, whatever the cost.
Kyoko was delighted to be home again in Mishima, among her girls and ledgers and bills of lading, her debts receivable, mortgage deeds, and promissory notes.
You've done quite well, she told her chief accountant.
The wizened little man bobbed a thank you and hobbled away. Balefully, she turned to her chief cook.
13 silver choken? 200 copper monmi for 1 week's food?
Oh, please excuse me, mistress, but rumours of war have sent prices soaring to the sky,
the fat man said truculently.
Everything. Fish and rice and vegetables. Even soya sauce has doubled since last month. And sake's worse. Work, work, work in that hot, airless kitchen. That must certainly be improved. Expensive? Ha! In 1 week I've served 172 guests, fed 10 courtesans, 11 hungry apprentice courtesans, 4 cooks, 16 maids, and 14 men servants. Please excuse me, mistress, so sorry. But my grandmother's very sick, so I must ask for 10 days' leave to...
Kyoko rent her hair, just enough to make her point, but not enough to mar her appearance, and sent him away saying she was ruined, ruined, that she'd have to close the most famous tea house in Mishima without such a perfect head cook, and that it would all be his fault. His fault that she'd have to cast all her devoted girls and faithful but unfortunate retainers into the snow.
Don't forget, winter's coming,
she wailed as a parting shot. Then, contentedly alone, she added up the profits against the losses, and the profits were twice what she expected. Her sake tasted better than ever, and if food prices were up, so was the cost of sake. At once she wrote to her son in Odawara, the site of their sake factory, telling him to double their output. Then she sorted out the inevitable quarrels of the maids, sacked 3, hired 4 more, sent for her courtesan broker, and bid heavily for the contracts of 7 more courtesans she admired.
And when would you like the honored ladies to arrive, Kyoko-san?
The old woman simpered, her own commission considerable.
At once, at once. Go on, run along.
Next she summoned her carpenter,
and settle plans for the extension of this tea-house, for the extra rooms, for the extra ladies.
At long last, the site on 6th Street's up for sale, Mr.